Welcome to the Knowledgeable Parent Podcast, where we share tips, research, and resources to help you to make the best decisions for yourself, your children, and your family as you learn to live your best life as a parent. I'm your host, a South Dakota licensed marriage and family therapist, a registered play therapist supervisor, and most importantly, a mom, Emily Laring. Hello, and welcome to the Knowledgeable Parent Podcast. Today, I'm excited to welcome Nicole Fluth from Functional Kids Pediatric Therapy to the podcast as we talk about occupational therapy and how this can be helpful for kids and parents. But before we get too much into conversation about what OT is and how it can be helpful, Nicole, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and just talk a little bit about your experience to help parents to get to know you and what makes you knowledgeable in this area.
Yeah, so my name is Nicole, and I'm an occupational therapist here in Sioux Falls. I've been practicing for about 4 years now, and started my clinic about a year and a half ago. So I really found that I wanted to start my own practice to be able to help parents better understand their child and how to help them in the home environment or in whatever environments it is in the community that they are really struggling with. I found that when the kiddos and families would come into the clinic or when I was seeing them at the school, it was hard to get that carryover at home, and parents just felt like they still didn't have enough tools and knowledge to really understand and make a difference in how their kid functions.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely what we hear too. A lot of parents are just wanting guidance and support for like what they can do at home, and they feel at a loss if they can't do anything specific. So it's nice to be able to include them.
Yeah, definitely.
Sure. Definitely. So let's go into the topic of occupational therapy, because I don't think a lot of people really understand what that is. And there's a lot of different types of therapy, so it can be kind of confusing for people. So can you kind of explain what occupational therapy is?
Yeah, so it's very common that people don't really know what occupational therapy is. So occupational therapy, we focus on daily occupations, and occupations can be anything that you need or have to do in a day. So oftentimes for kids, that's play is a big piece of that for them. They spend a lot of their day playing and learning through play. But anything from brushing their teeth and doing their morning routine to sleeping, making sure they're being able to fall asleep, stay asleep, using the bathroom, any of those daily activities, that's kind of our job, is to jump in and help kids in those and help families learn how to make that a little bit less stressful.
Okay, so just about getting through the day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds super broad.
It is.
So then, like, what kind of things can an occupational therapist help a child to do?
Yeah, so we have a lot of kiddos that come to us, and parents are just concerned with their kiddos are having behaviors or meltdowns, or they don't really understand why, but their child just will not wear a certain, you know, certain variety of clothing or won't try certain foods. And so we kind of start with an evaluation and figure out what are those areas that the kiddo is struggling with, and then we will target that occupation basically through looking at the child, the environment, and then also the task at hand. So how can we adjust the environment? How can we support the child and give them skills they need? Or how can we change the task if needed, or provide more assistance through caregivers or through us as well.
Sure. Now, sometimes in those topics that you were talking about, like how do I get them to eat a food that they don't like, mm-hmm. or how do I get them to put on a texture of clothing that they don't like, I find that parents are very adamant. This is like a listening issue. He has to do this. Mm-hmm. I've asked him to put on, let's say, a winter coat, and he doesn't want to do that. So how much do you encourage parents to push in those situations, or is it more about understanding like that tactile sensitivity and meeting that need instead of it being a listening thing?
Yeah, it kind of can vary. I mean, we definitely will look into what is that behavior and what's the true purpose behind it. Is it because, I mean, are they avoiding that task or refusing to do something because it's creating stress for their body, which is often the case with our sensory kiddos? And so in that situation, we're going to ask the parents to kind of try to take a step back, get down on the child's level, and just join them in that and then make compromises. We talk all the time about, you know, like, is it really important? Do they absolutely have to wear blue jeans, or can we, you know, compromise and let them wear their sweatpants or their nicer sweatpants this day? So we talk a lot about that and figuring out what's the most important to actually happen for the family and what absolutely has to happen versus what can we kind of give it a little bit on to make sure that the child is supported and feels safe, because otherwise you get into a power struggle and right. That kiddo's in this state of stress and they can't really get through it.
Mm-hmm. So it's almost like we're asking them to do something that, like, if it was a developmental delay and we like had a diagnosis mm-hmm. and knew that, we wouldn't force them to say like walk if they didn't know how to do that yet. But right. We're forcing them to put on these clothes that is like putting them in such a stressful situation.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Interesting. Okay. So how does a parent know if their child would benefit? Because I think a lot of kids are having meltdowns, right? That's happening mm-hmm. in houses all over the city. So how does a parent know that my kid needs OT versus this is just developmentally appropriate?
Yeah, I mean, it is hard. I will say the number one thing is like there's a wealth of knowledge online because there's a whole variety of things that parents are going to be looking at. But I think if you just, for parents, it's like if you have that gut feeling that my child seems to be having more intense meltdowns than other kids his age, or the meltdowns are lasting a lot longer, or they're just creating so much stress for you in your daily activities that you can't get things done, then it's at a point where you probably should get some help. Where, you know, for other parents, it's normal to have general tantrums that are shorter in length or it's a shorter phase, but if it goes on for a long period of time, then it's clearly something more significant.
Sure. And I found that parents who, like, it's their first kid, they don't realize how intense it is until they have their second child, and then they say, oh, this can be this way? I didn't realize that. And so at that point, they, like, recognize that this was more intense than is what is considered age appropriate.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So definitely I think one thing for parents is to try and start just observing behaviors of other kids whenever you're able to and see how your kid interacts with others and just looking at, is this something that I'm noticing other kids doing, or talk to other parents too and see, you know, what's their experience? Do their kids have extreme meltdowns like your kid, or kind of, you know, I don't love the comparison game, right. but kind of getting an idea if you're not able to really know what is general development.
Sure. Yeah, and I typically say, like, in my career, I've been trained to understand little kiddos. Like, that's just what I do. And parents are doctors, they're lawyers, they're bankers, they're all these different professions, and they haven't had really any experience in understanding child development. And so they might not even recognize that their kid doesn't fit in that mold, and they might not even be looking for it. So are you looking specifically, if you're doing that comparison of other kids, is it how they handle being told no, how they handle a frustration, like that kind of thing you're suggesting they look at?
Yeah, looking at, like, yeah, I would say mostly the behaviors of how are they able to respond when it's time to leave something that's mm-hmm. fun. Mm-hmm. I've worked a lot out at the sandlot, and any time that it's the open play is done and kids have to go, I mean, you see meltdowns with every kid, but understanding, is it taking that parent 10 minutes of chasing the kid around and they're just completely ignoring parents and screaming and throwing their shoes, or are they, you know, having a little bit of tantrum, crossing their arms, stomping, and then following parents out the door?
Sure.
So kind of recognizing that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. That timeline and that intensity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, good to know. And probably for parents to recognize, like, if it's happening every single time you transition, or every single time they're told no versus here and there.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
In different settings. Okay. Interesting. Okay, so if a parent says, okay, I've watched my kid in comparison to other kids, I'm recognizing that there's something going on here I might need some help with, how do they start the process of getting set up with OT?
Yeah, so there's kind of several different ways of doing that. The first I would say is just kind of search, where is there an occupational therapist in your community, and just kind of start by calling one of them. Because usually, like myself, we offer free screens, but I'm guessing a lot of other places do as well, where they'll sit and have a phone conversation with you and figure out, okay, is this appropriate? and then let you know what the steps are. Some insurance companies will require a referral from a physician, and others won't. So it kind of just varies. And so you would just kind of look to get kind of set up with an occupational therapist. You can go through your physician, but I will say a lot of times, a great understood field. And so physicians don't always know either when to refer you. So I wouldn't say that that's my number one recommendation. I usually start with just reach out directly to whatever OT there is in your area.
Okay. So if there is a referral required, then the OT could contact their physician to get that referral and explain what the concerns are?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. The OT or the facility can do it on your behalf, or you can ask them as well, and they'll know how to walk you through. Here's what you can do. Here's exactly what you can ask to get that referral.
Okay. Do primary care providers still have a misunderstanding of, specifically we've talked a little bit about sensory here, are they not educated or informed on sensory? Is this like a newer topic?
I feel like it seems to me like it's still getting written off as typical when, sure, when parents bring up concerns. And my thought is, if a parent has enough of a concern in their gut that they're asking about it, mm-hmm, it's clearly creating some stress for their family. And mm-hmm, so I think it's always worth getting that initial evaluation with an OT, and then they can tell you, yes, it really is a significant concern, or no, you know, that seems fairly normal. You can just be working on this and this, sure, at home. Because we are kind of, we're the experts, and that's kind of the case in any field. Refer to the expert first,
sure,
get your evaluation, and then see if, mm-hmm, it's needed or not.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I find that the doctors just, it seems like they don't really fully understand sensory.
Sure.
And sometimes it gets lumped into those signs of autism, mm-hmm, that can overlap,
mm-hmm,
but it's maybe not appropriate. So I think there are times where those kids might get sent for an autism screening.
Okay.
Or behavioral kids will get sent for play therapy or some other type of therapy, but not necessarily recognizing that there's sensory aspects in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also wonder, too, if the professionals in the medical field are concerned about labeling a child too early. Like, they only get that 30-minute conversation or even less. So if a parent is saying he's throwing tantrums every time we ask him to change his activity, that they're afraid of putting this, like, label on the kid,
mm-hmm,
when it's maybe it's supposed to be developmentally appropriate, or maybe they think, oh, maybe as parents you could be doing something different and then he wouldn't be having those transitional challenges. So I think I've seen a little bit of an anxiety there of, like, not wanting to refer for, like, a diagnostic reason. But then, yeah, that we have kids that are kind of falling through the cracks and not getting those services.
Sure.
So you can be kind of like a fallback. Like, if they don't meet the criteria that you need for the diagnosis or whatever, then you're able to say to the parents, nope, everything is looking within age-appropriate limits right now, and there's no interventions that we need to do.
Yeah, and so for occupational therapy, actually, we don't it's not within our scope to actually diagnose kids with anything. So, and sensory processing disorder is not an official diagnosis,
okay,
at this time. And so specifically with sensory concerns or anything like that, we would do an evaluation and kind of determine, here's where your child is really struggling. And yes, these concerns are significant. And then we have treatment diagnoses that we use, but that doesn't really follow a child as like an official diagnosis,
okay,
as they go on. So that is one thing that's good, because mm-hmm, I think we have a lot of families that will come start with OT and they're like, well, I think my kid has ADHD tendencies,
mm-hmm,
or they have sensory concerns, or they might be on the spectrum. And there's all these questions about that. And to us, we don't need that to kind of figure out where we can help them in those daily activities.
Sure.
And then it might get to the point where we're like, okay, we've kind of done all of this extra work. And now we think, you know, it might be worth looking into getting some sort of diagnosis. And then,
okay,
we'd send them back to their doctor to kind of look into that further and see what other services that they need.
Sure. So a referral for an OT would never be because I think the kid has autism and I want a diagnosis, or I think the kid has ADHD and I want the diagnosis, because you would send them elsewhere to get that formal diagnosis. You're just looking at those occupations, basically.
Yep. We're just looking at how are they functioning in daily life, and how can we help with that. So it's, yeah, it's kind of nice we can skip past all the paper diagnosis.
Yeah, that is nice.
Yeah.
So that's a benefit. Okay. So then if a parent does go through this entire process and decides to get it set up, what can they expect from that OT session? Like, where does it take place and what types of things are going to be happening in there?
Yeah. So I would say the majority of OT clinics that you would go to still provide services in an outpatient setting, like at the facility that you go to. But we do offer, and a few places around this area are starting to offer services in the home or at the child's daycare or out in the community. And so it can kind of look different depending on where you're going. But a typical treatment for OT, you know, we do our evaluation on the first session, which is a lot of questions to parents, just kind of asking and figuring out, when are you seeing these specific behaviors? How long are they happening? What are your main concerns? What are your daily routines like? And kind of all of those factors. And so that's more of an interview that first time. And then we'll interact with the child and kind of observe them in play and seeing how they respond and what their skills are. And then after that, we would recommend how frequent we'd want to see the child. And those sessions typically would be between 30 minutes to an hour. And it looks a lot like play. Mm-hmm.
I fully support.
Yes. It looks very similar to some other therapies, but we're really looking at how are they engaging. We are focused for our sensory kiddos a lot on moving their body and figuring out ways to teach them and teach parents how different types of movement can help to regulate their bodies and help their bodies and brains to calm a little bit more or respond more appropriately to all the sensory input that happens in a day. So it's going to look a lot different depending on what your goals are. If you have a kiddo with more physical disabilities that we're working on, fine motor control or vision, it's going to look a little bit more like hand over hand if they need physical assistance. It just varies.
Sure. Now, in the play therapy world, depending on the type of model, but oftentimes in most play therapy, it is a therapist working individually with the child, and they might involve the parents, but they keep some of that information confidential. So when you're involving parents in the OT process, mm-hmm. are they there for the entire session with you, or do you take them elsewhere? Like, how does that work?
So it can be different, again, depending on what your goals are and what the child responds to best. So I know that myself and the therapists that work with me, we will kind of set that up at the expectation up at the beginning with parents. Like, are you wanting to be involved in this? Are you wanting strategies? And we might try to have them be involved in the session and take more of a coaching approach and, you know, show them how we're going to interact with the child and then have them try and carry out those strategies. We might just be working with the child and educating the parent as we're going through the okay. session. Or parents might wait out in the lobby or not be in the same room. There are kiddos that have more behaviors if a parent is there. Mm-hmm. So if we are noticing that, we might ask them to kind of step out and then just ask them to come back at the last 5 or 10 minutes, and we can kind of talk about what happened and any strategies that we would have for home.
Okay. So then there are things that they can do then afterwards. Do you give them like specific assignments or homework type things? Or is it, this is how you respond when they do this? Like, what kind of happens in that spot?
Both okay. of those. So again, OT is a fun field because it's really diverse. There are times where we might give parents a specific like set of homework to work on that week. So we work a lot on integrating primitive reflexes. So we might actually give them reflex exercises that we want them to try and do with their child at home. We also will teach them about like a sensory brushing protocol, which again is something that they would have to then do at home. Other times it will be just us giving them some handouts and showing them and explaining to them the concepts of how to incorporate different sensory activities into their day, and then encouraging them to find ways to do that throughout the week, but they can kind of choose based on what works best for their routines.
Okay. So if they say, hey, you know, at home we generally do okay, but we've been getting calls from the school every single day, or the teacher sending me an email saying, you know, he can't transition, or she's punching people, you know, those types of things. Do you offer then services to the schools, or can you help support the schools in that?
Yeah, so it just depends on where they're at. In the United States, if a kid is in a public school district, then they would have to qualify for occupational therapy within the educational setting. So they would have to have an IEP to receive OT services in the school setting. Okay. Because we are, OT in the school world is a related service. And so unless they have a speech therapy or have another educational need that they're receiving educational services on an IEP, then they can't just receive OT in the school. So that's a little bit different. But then if they're not in the public school system, private schools do it differently, and then daycares, it's kind of facility by, you know, each, okay. They each have their own rules for it. So we, do go into a lot of, daycares and in-home providers, in the area. So we've had that where they'll call us and they're open to us coming in and kind of talking to their teachers, showing them strategies. We'll go in and see what's happening in the classroom, what is the environment like? Is it super stressful? Is it overwhelming? When is the kid having behaviors, and kind of figure out what the issue is and then work with the kiddo. Sometimes we'll do it in a separate room to kind of be able to get their attention and really work on those skills. But then other times we'll go into the classroom and kind of work on interacting with peers and responding appropriately, sitting down for circle time, and then giving teachers ways that they can help the child to regulate throughout the day.
Sure. Okay. Mm-hmm. So in our area, there's quite a lengthy waiting list for OT. So if somebody is saying, okay, this all makes complete sense to me, I think my kid has sensory issues, what can I do now while I'm waiting the 2-3 months that I might have to wait on a waiting list because my kid is struggling? Are there things that parents can be doing at home, or is it really unsafe to make recommendations like that because you don't know, like, the individual kid's needs?
Yeah, so any, like, specific sensory recommendations, it really does just vary from kid to kid, because we have 8 different sensory systems, and we all fall in a spectrum of how we take in and interpret and respond to that sensory input. So it is very individualized as to how that child is processing sensory information and responding to it. But in general, I always suggest starting with getting your hands on as many books or podcasts or online resources that you can to learn about sensory processing challenges and identify. That's a great way to look at. There's tons of lists out there of, like, if my child has any of these things, they probably have sensory challenges. So being able to go and read through those resources and starting to understand what it even means to be able to process correctly, process sensory information and respond to it. And then there are some really great resources out there as well for, like, websites or online coaching programs that will kind of give general tips and advice for particular issues. Like, if your child is sensitive to clothing or a picky eater, or general tips for transitioning between places, all of that kind of stuff. There's resources out there for that. That's better than nothing, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's so hard for parents to just sit and, like, how do I help them? Because we just want them to get to that neurotypical level. And, like, it's hard for those kids when they're 4, 5, 6, and, like, they're the kid who's known as the one who's, like, always hitting, or they're the one who doesn't know how to initiate play. And so they just come in and just, like, leap on everybody. Like, so parents are always trying to find special ways to help them. And so they feel so stressed when they can't figure out what to do. But it's like a process, and individual, each one of them is going to need something different, for sure.
Yeah.
Are there recommendations that you've had for like childcare or preschools about how you can make it more of a sensory friendly environment?
Yeah, my number one kind of challenge and issue with working with childcare providers is just that a lot of our daycares, the ratio is pretty high of how mm-hmm. many kids are in a classroom. And so that's probably the number one thing is if you can find a way to decrease the amount of kids in one space, that just helps a ton in terms of how much sensory input is going on in the environment, how much noise there is, or just visual input from kids moving in front of you and things on the wall and toys out. So that's a big thing is looking at having organized classrooms where things can be put away, not having too much clutter visually on the walls, providing some structure in the day using like a visual schedule to show the kids kind of here's what is going on during the day. Those are kind of some general things to start. And then kind of from there, the big thing would be probably addressing social emotional, mm-hmm. like having some curriculum that really addresses social emotional skills, even in those young kiddos. Having a calm down corner that the kids know they can go over to that corner whenever they need to. Any kid in the classroom has access, and they can go over there and take a minute away from the class without being punished or seen as like that they're trying to get away from whatever they're supposed to be doing.
Sure.
Because if you can provide those breaks and teach kids to use that, even if they temporarily use it as a way to get out of something, eventually it'll kind of turn into something that all the kids will recognize. This is a place I can go when I need a break. And they start to learn those skills of like how to interact.
Sure. And something I've learned about the calm down corners or the comfy corner, whatever people want to call it, is we have to make sure that we're taking into account all the different sensory needs. So if mm-hmm. you have a kid who likes to color with black color crayons and like is frequently breaking things or throwing things, if you send him to the calm down corner and it's all just like soft and there's nothing for him to like him or her to have like a energy release, I've had a few kids who've gotten in quite a bit of trouble in their calm down corner because it didn't meet their need. So yeah. they were taking the little like, oh, this is a sensory jar, this is so beautiful, and they were throwing it across the room because mm-hmm. they needed a physical outlet. Are there good suggestions for sensory things to include in those calm down corners?
Yeah, I mean, there's a variety of like items to include in there. I like to always think about having one thing I like to do is have a visual chart on the wall that has like your happy face, your sad face, and they can kind of just, even if they're not showing you how they're feeling, it's a way to kind of remind them that this is where we can kind of check in and it's okay to have all of the mm-hmm. feelings, but it's not okay to have, or it's not okay to respond with aggressive behaviors sure. or destructive behaviors. And so I think having those tactile items that are calming, things for them to look at, like the bubble timers can be really good. I love the handheld fidgets that you like shoot rings. It's like filled with water and you shoot yep. rings on it.
I have one of those.
So I love those. And soft pillows. There are quite a few fidgets out there, but I don't love them all. So sure. I'd say I'm pretty selective with those usually. Lots of ones you can squeeze, but not the stretchy ones that you can like whip around yep. in the air. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of options like that. The one thing though is that there are kids who aren't just going to be able to go sit and calm mm-hmm. down. They do have to physically get out some of that aggression and just tension in their body. And so that's where we kind of teach, we show parents and we show educators and kids, we start to teach them that there are things you can physically do with your body to kind of help release that. There's deep pressure. It's called proprioceptive input. And so we call a lot of different activities heavy work. So anything mm-hmm. that is kind of really making your muscles push and pull and tense up can be really calming to the nervous system and to the brain. And so we'll teach kids how to squeeze their fists 5 times or do wall pushes or incorporate kind of different activities like that into the daily routine for kids, doing a lot of animal walks as you're transitioning sure. down the hallway. Have all the kids line up on the wall and do 3 wall pushes. Push your hands together and count to 10 or something like that. So doing those body-based movements as well can really help.
And it sounds like the key to that isn't, oh, you're having a difficult time, let's do this. It's all throughout the day.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So we call it kind of a sensory diet, but it just means looking at all of the things you do in a day and looking at how can you incorporate various sensory activities that are going to meet the kiddo's needs and help them to stay calm and regulated and to pay attention throughout the day, or at least have less of the significant extremes of huge meltdowns and then crashing and then huge meltdowns. So there are a lot of ways to do it. But again, that sensory diet is kind of something that it takes a lot of learning about what the activities are and how they can be chosen to address each child's specific needs. Yeah. So that's a hard thing to do for an entire class. But there are things in general that you can kind of incorporate throughout the day to help all of your kids regulate.
Sure. So like if you were doing like a freeze dance because you wanted to get them moving, that could be helpful for some and could escalate challenges in others.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. definitely. Movement is one of those things that is often stimulating for a lot of our kids. And there's a lot of kids that are seeking out sensory input throughout their day, but they don't feel calm once they've received that input. So they are going to be bouncing off the walls and you think, oh, we just need to give them more. We just need to let them run it out. But that doesn't work for all of the kids. Mm-hmm. So the freeze dance is actually a really good one because it incorporates a structured like time that they have to stop and control their body. And that creates that break for them and in their brain to process that a little bit and calm down. But if you're just incorporating kind of unstructured running and movement like that, it can get out of control for those kids.
Sure. So generally for young kids, exercise, physical activity should be part of the daily routine no matter what, right? That's that's how they learn. That's what they need.
Yep.
Okay. So, but there can be some of these things that could just put everybody in different zones throughout the day that could cause some challenges.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The thing I struggle with sensory is I think an OTU once told me that the only consistency is inconsistency, and that's really hard because parents just want to know if I do this one time, it's going to work on Tuesday, it's going to work on Wednesday, and that's not what happens for kids.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. kids who have sensory processing challenges will probably really challenge you as a parent because they are going to respond differently one day than the next, and oftentimes they'll have trends where they might completely get over some sensory issues or quirks that they have, but then develop some others. And so over time, the idea of getting therapy and working through that is to be able to help the child to identify what it is that's bothering them, help them to also be desensitized overall so that they're not having such huge responses to things. But to just kind of get to that place where it's a little bit more mild in how it presents itself. I mean, we all have sensory quirks. Everyone has their own preferences. And so just getting to a place where it's more functional and we're not having the extremes of not being able to engage in activities or transition from place to place because it's too overwhelming for us. So that's kind of the overall goal of therapy. It's not that your kiddo is going to completely grow out of it. They might always have some different things that they struggle with, but mm-hmm. helping them to have the tools to know what to do to help themselves regulate better throughout the day, and then educating parents a lot, especially with those younger kiddos who can't really do it themselves yet. They need an adult to help them with it.
Mm-hmm. And so like if a kid has a sensory issue that does not get any intervention, is that something that like gets worse and worse over the years, or do they kind of grow out of it?
Yeah, I think it just depends on the severity of it. So like myself, this is why I became an OT, because I had a lot of sensory issues growing up. I would cry and whine, and it was a huge stressful thing every morning when my mom would brush my hair. So when my mom was on a business trip one year, my dad took me and just chopped my hair off because it was, you know, but back then they didn't have therapy for it, so they didn't know what to do. But thankfully, my mom actually found one of the original books on sensory processing disorder when I was young and kind of read through that and learned, okay, we need to take you to the store and feel through all the socks and figure out which ones are going to work and which ones aren't. And then we're only buying that type of sock. And so she would have arguments with me, or not arguments, but in the store, she would bring me over and be like, I know you want this shirt, but let's feel it. Do you feel this tag? Do you feel this seam? You're not going to wear this. And so as I got older, it was a little bit easier for me to understand, like, okay, yeah, I can't have that shirt because it's just not going to work for me.
Sure. So even though your eyes thought it was awesome, like, right, your body was going to reject it. Right. Yeah.
So that's kind of, it's just a process. So kids, they don't necessarily grow out of it, and it won't, but it's different for every kid.
Because you did not receive OT services.
I did not receive OT services, but I think it would have been stressful for my family a lot longer had my mom not read about what was going on and started to understand, like, oh, she's not just being difficult.
Right.
She really feels a lot more. I mean, I was just more sensitive to all these different things. Mm-hmm. And so once she understood that, then she was able to kind of see, okay, she was able to be more patient with me and kind of work through that. And that's a big piece of it too, is really just understanding your kiddo and how their brain works, and that they're not just trying to be difficult, but they really can't, can't function in that moment.
If your mom had been viewing this as a, oh, she's just having defiance towards me, it would have been an ongoing power struggle. Right. And, yeah, it would have probably impacted your guys' relationship.
Right.
And then it wasn't just a behavior. It was something going on physically for you.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, like, I still have days where I try on 3 different pairs of socks before I get out the door, but I'm not getting worked up about it, and you know, I'm able to just quick fix them and then I walk out the door. So it's kind of just learning how to deal with all of those things.
Right. Yeah. So the things that parents are doing are helping their kids to understand that instead of saying you must wear jeans, it's figuring out how you can wear something else and find that thing that makes you be able to get through the day and do what you need to do.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And even teaching the kid, like, there are ways sometimes that we can override it and we can kind of deal with it for so long. So that's part of what we do in therapy too, is that we'll try, like, if it's a clothing sensitivity, we'll have parents bring it in and be like, okay, so I know you don't like the way this feels. Let's try this other type. You know, we might try different texture clothing and work towards it, or, like, let's wear it for 10 minutes and see if we can do it. Mm-hmm. And then we'll incorporate movement activities while we're doing it, or something that the kid really enjoys. Because if you can kind of distract their brain, then you're able to get their brain to think about something else. And it's not really going to be constantly like, oh, this is irritating me. Won't be constantly triggered. So
sure,
there are ways to kind of work through that. And then as the kid gets older and can understand, like, this is why I need to try these things, or understanding kind of the social appropriateness of certain behaviors that they have, or I guess better ways to redirect their sensory needs.
Sure. So, like, from a parent perspective, I'm thinking, like, maybe my kid doesn't need to wear the light jacket on the light day. Like, they could probably just go, if they really want to go without it, they could. We can have it with if they decide that they want to.
Right.
But yet the parent might push for the winter jacket when it's 20 below. So there might be times where a parent has to encourage that. So we're teaching their brain how to, like you said, like, get distracted from that. And, like, you're using those services to help them do that. So it's kind of a balancing act for parents. There might be some things that they have to, because at school you will have to sit even though you don't want to sit. Which could be a whole nother podcast, but but like helping them to know the things that they absolutely have to do, and then being kind of flexible on the things that they don't really have to do.
Right. Yep.
Sure. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Well, this is great. I love having conversations about sensory stuff, and I always feel like we've hardly even tackled the topic because it's so complex and can lead to a lot of stress for parents and for kiddos. But it's good to be starting to have the conversation, even if it's just for parents to hear this, and for teachers to hear this and say, oh, this might not be a kid arguing with me. This is physically a kid's reaction of overwhelm from the sound, the light, the texture, whatever it might be that's getting them, for sure. Okay. So if parents in the area or the surrounding communities are interested in learning more about your practice, Functional Kids, learning about OT, where can they go to find more information about you?
So they can find us just by Googling functional kids, pediatric therapy. Our business page will come up, but you can also go to our website, which is www.functionalkidssd.com. And so most of our information is on the website or on our Facebook page, Functional Kids Pediatric Therapy. So they can get a hold of us in any of those ways. And we are doing some groups this summer.
Okay.
So that is a good way to kind of get your foot in for kids. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm trying to gear these groups towards families who maybe are just questioning, like, well, my kiddo has some things, but I don't really think they need therapy one-on-one.
Sure.
And so kind of we are considering them enrichment groups, and they're for any kiddos that are might just have a little bit extra, they might need a little extra attention, but not full-on services, or maybe parents are just like, I don't really know, they just want to get started with something. That's a great place to start, because they're going to be led by our therapists, and we're able to kind of determine if their child needs more or not.
Sure. And for reference point, that is summer of 2022. Yes. Is when these groups, yes, are. Not that there won't be in other summers as well, but that's what you're doing right now. Mm-hmm. So that can be kind of a good entry point. So right now, if somebody wanted to get in, they could call or go to your website and find out about these groups and actually get in, or is there a waiting list right now for those?
Nope, they're still open right now. Okay. And we'll be releasing more throughout the summer.
Okay.
And our goal is to continue to offer groups like throughout the school year as well. It's just harder sometimes when we're looking at times outside of school hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
it gets to be tough.
Okay. Yeah.
So there's different options. There's individual, like in your home or mm-hmm. in the clinic, and there's these group or these classes.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. Anything else that you think would be really important for parents, teachers, anybody who's listening today to know about OT?
No, I think just starting the conversation or just giving parents a little bit more about what we do is always helpful. And so if you have questions about OT, I just suggest starting to Google some of it, honestly, because there's so much out there. So looking at OT specifically for pediatrics and what that is and what it looks like, that's just a good place to start. There's tons of resources out there for that. And I just encourage parents, even if you feel like you can't afford therapy or you don't have the time for it, or maybe your need is not significant enough, I just encourage you to go check out what resources are out there, or at least pick up a book about it to kind of learn more so that you can just implement things day to day to help your kid.
Thank
out.
You for listening sure. to the Knowledgeable
Well, thank you so
podcast.
Much, Nicole, for being
Did
here
you
today.
Like what you
really
heard?
Appreciate it.
Share yeah, your opinion by rating the podcast on your
And for our listeners,
platform.
If you had a question that came up from this,
time.
Please leave it in a comment section below. Feel free to ask any questions if it might introduce a new topic for us in the future, whether we have Nicole come back or we have somebody else come back to talk about it. But we want to know what's going on in your life, and so leave a comment so that we can know how we can help. Thanks.